Next item on the agenda, public hearing, consideration of increasing the current 14-inch minimum size limit of summer flounder harvested and possessed by commercial hook and line fishermen for VAC 62010.
As you recall, last month there was a request by Commissioner Robbins to add this in our discussion today. And again, as you know, the commission and certainly staff has received a lot of complaints over the last several years in particular about commercial hook and line versus recreational, not so much in the possession limit, but really just focusing on the disparity in the two different size limits, particularly when you look at them, they're in a recreation, could be, they're in a Grady White, a recreational boat, and using the same gear, even though it's a commercial hook and line. So kind of went through this exercise and tried to provide some background how we ended up where we are. Most marine species are regulated by a combination of allowable gear, seasonal closures, and possession limit. Management of the commercial and the recreational fisheries differs most often in the allowable gear, in other words, the amount or the type, like trawl, for instance, and the possession limit. In fact, most of our regulated species, recreationally and commercially, the size limits are identical. Examples, amberjack, black drum, cobia, gray trout, king mackerel, speckled trout, tautog, plus most of the crustaceans and clams and oysters and blue crabs, for instance. The size limit's the same. There's a few exceptions, and here the difference is usually minimal. Large coastal sharks, scup, black sea bass. The history of the commercial hook and line is such that prior to 1993, there was no commercial hook and line, but anyone could sell their catch. You didn't even need a saltwater fishing license prior to that time. If I paid $29, I could buy a crab pot license and set 5 crab pots on the weekend or 500 during the week. There was no difference. And there was no restrictions on whether or not I sold my catch. And certainly, oftentimes hear the term pinhookers, someone they might leave the dock as a recreational trip, have a good day, and they get back to the dock and say, it's not really a commercial trip, but we're going to sell a portion of our catch to pay for expenses. And that had gone on. But beginning in 1993, with mandatory reporting and the harvester's registration card, they needed this card in order to sell their catch. And a new gear license was added, commercial hook and line. The commercial hook and line license, all it did is it allowed someone to sell their catch. And in fact, they had to stay within the same boundaries of the recreational limits, which they had been doing for years and years, even though they weren't recognized as a gear. But the years we talked about in the last item, 93 through 1995, they were limited to the recreational possession limits. But also at that time, anyone could buy a commercial hook and line license. I mean, there was no waiting list, no magic number, we're only selling this many. And who really wanted them if, what can I do? I can sell, I think the possession limit for flounder might have been 10 fish at that time. I can sell 10 flounder. But in 1996, that's when the commission limited the commercial hook and line license numbers to 200. And also at that time, they revisited the issue of the difference between recreational possession limits and commercial limits. And what they decided was in most species, certainly all but one that I can think of where there was a commercial quota, that since they're a commercial, they should fish under the commercial restriction, season size, tag them. And also at that time, in 1996, there wasn't the huge difference we have today. The recreational limit was 14 inches. The commercial limit was 13 inches. It's almost, if we could go dial back in 1996, 1997, there were probably more complaints about, geez, they can, why can they keep more fish than I can? Wasn't the difference in size? And what you saw in 97, as stricter quotas were established by, I think at that time it was Mid-Atlantic Council, but it's a Mid-Atlantic Council, Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission plan now, were established and the states were held accountable. You saw the recreational size limit in particular start to go up. But the commercial size limits remained at 14 since 1997. And main reason being that the two fisheries have different requirements in order to operate most efficiently. The commercial size limit was really set by the offshore trawlers and the size of their trawl nets, where on a coastwide basis, certainly 90%, probably even closer to 95% of summer flounder are caught by some type of trawl. The mesh size was such that would not retain or pass through most flounder less than 14 inches. That's an ideal world as the net gets other stuff in it. That doesn't always occur, but that's the primary reason, one of the main reasons why that 14-inch size limit has never really been seriously revisited for the commercial fishery. Plus, it's a marketable product. The recreational fishery, on the other hand, the one thing they couldn't live with, and we hear today, is closed seasons. But whatever you do, I don't care how, you know, how tough you make it on us for size limits, please don't close the season for any period of time. The way the commercial fishery has tracked off to control its fishery and fishing power is they have very short directed offshore season openings. And in some cases, what we've seen here, first quarter and fourth quarter, where you have an opening, vessels get one trip. And in this time period, you see the size limit has gone up, and probably if you could track the complaints, as the size limit has gone up or the disparity between the two size limits, the complaints have increased. And really what's fueled it the last couple years, if you recall, and I'll show it to you again if you don't, the slide where you see how the spawning stock biomass has gone up. There's a lot of flounder in that 15-inch range to 17.5 inches. And we hear from our recreational fishermen all the time, gosh, I can go out there and catch 100 fish. I'm lucky to get one big enough to keep. And it's a frustration on their part that they are having such a hard time getting a fish they can keep. Meanwhile, someone that they look over their side, again, it looks, many of them, like any other recreational boat. They're using the same gear. They're able to keep fish as small as 14 inches if they choose. The good news is for next year, it looks like we will very well see another decrease in size limit of the recreational size limit from the current 18.5 inches, since we're due another increase. Have to say, and I know some of the gentlemen that are here today, I know some of them attended the January 2010 FMAC meeting, and we're also at last week's meeting, FMAC meeting. And in both cases, FMAC reviewed this and unanimously supported no changes to size limit. Other states have the same problem, and that's what this slide will show you. And they dealt with it kind of in similar ways. The more northern states have maintain the same minimum size for all their commercial fisheries. But if you look over here, New Jersey's limited. There's just 7 licensees. Didn't get a clear picture from Connecticut, but it's limited. Over here, they do it with possession limits. And they all note it is a contentious issue. Delaware has gone to enforcing the same size limit as the recreational size limit, as has Maryland. And also in Maryland, they are limited to just 50 pounds a day. And in North Carolina, even though the size limit is very similar, we got from them, they're still hearing complaints about the difference in size limits, even though I get more, we get complaints about why can I go to North Carolina and keep them 15 and they got to be 18 and a half here. This shows really two things. One of the reasons the complaints occur, the fishery itself, and this is landings by pounds by day by the commercial hook and line fishery, it occurs primarily in that mid to late April time period through the warm summer months, the same time as the recreational fishery. I would also like to point out the main period of the commercial landings isn't even on this graph. We have that early first quarter landings that's usually takes place in the latter part, the end of February through March, done sometime in March. And then we have one way out here in the fall in late November and December. What that means is the product that they're catching and putting it on the market comes at a time when there's not a lot of fresh product out there. And it wouldn't be unreasonable to assume that their average price per pound for fish is double what they get in the trawl fishery in the early part of the year and then in the latter part of the fall. This shows the number of pounds licensed by the commercial hook and line license holder. I showed you this graph before, serving a dual purpose. We have seen a steady increase, but again, putting it in perspective, Virginia's quota and the 95% of it usually is caught by the offshore group is over 3 million pounds. And they're, this includes through 210, they're 63,000 pounds. Again, the same kind of information. Even though the two fisheries really have dealt with constraining their fishers in different ways, the plan seems to be working in that respect. And this press release that I referenced, last item, and then this one showing the spawning stock biomass and the recruits, same picture. Something's working. Maybe we had nothing to do with it, and the flounder would have done this anyhow. But certainly, between the half to a million recreational anglers that it's estimated that Virginia sees and the fishing power of the offshore commercial fleet, if they went unabated, it would be the same situation as Rob mentioned with blue crab. We'd be back to the early 90s in a hurry. That staff recommendation, I shouldn't say identical to FMAC, but it is. We recommend no action at this time. Happy to answer questions.
Questions of Mr. Gillingham? Thank you, Lewis. Very comprehensive report.
I'll leave this up just in case anyone wants to see the slide.
This is a public hearing. Anyone wish to be heard on this matter? Mr. Barr? Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner, Associate Commissioners. I appreciate your allowing me to come up and speak with you today. My name is John Barr. I live up on the eastern shore of Virginia. I've been a board member of your Recreational Fishing Advisory Board for about 8 years now, so I am very familiar with and I appreciate the amount of time that goes into the studying and making the decisions on issues such as these before you today. I came today to speak on my own behalf as a recreational fisherman. I do not own a commercial car. I do not own a commercial hook and line license. However, I do have a lot of friends that do own these licenses, and I know how important they are to those individuals. I've not heard of any of these license holders having a problem with the changes that are being proposed as far as limiting the number of crew members or the restriction of making changes to those lists once a year. I've not heard of them complaining about or having any problem with the establishment of the restricted commercial summer flounder endorsement license or for the setting of the 200-pound vessel limit for the offshore fishery that you just finished dealing with. The biggest concern here today is the consideration being given to the raising of the minimum size limit from 14 inches, which is the minimum size limit for all commercial fishermen, to something higher, such as the minimum size limit for recreational fishermen. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to take just 1 second and ask all of those that are here today to deal with the 14 or the raising of the 14-inch limit to stand up. Thank you. Gentlemen, that should give you some idea of the significance of the issue that we're speaking to at this time. I am an avid flounder fisherman. I fish several times a week from March until November for flounder, and I have fished numerous times in close proximity to some of these people that hold commercial fishing line licenses. So I know that for every 100 flounder that you catch, on a good day, maybe 3 or 4 of those flounder are going to meet recreational size limits. So that says to me that if this proposed change is made, the commercial hook and line fishery is done and all of these licenses are worthless. I realize that VMRC doesn't get involved in the sale of these licenses or the amount of money that they're sold for. They just handle the transfers in accordance with their regulations. However, this is a big issue to the people that just stood up back here who have paid probably on average somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000, in some cases as much as $15,000, to purchase a license that, if this change is effected, is going to be totally worthless. There are only about 200 of these licenses granted by VMRC regulations, and these licenses are the lifeline of many of the people that just stood up behind me. They depend on the income from these licenses, especially in the tough economic times that we're in today, just to make ends meet. I know that a small vocal faction of recreational fishermen resent the fact that the commercial fishermen can catch and keep smaller fish than they can. I've wished many times myself when I was out there fishing that I could keep just 2 or 3 so I'd have enough for supper tonight when I came back in. But I think most of the calls of complaint come from those who are not aware of the differences between the commercial and recreational size limits. Maybe an advertisement campaign of some type should be considered to educate the public concerning the difference between the commercial and recreational hook and line fishing. I've discussed this situation with several of our Marine Patrol officers over on the Eastern Shore. They advised me that this has not placed any hardship on them because they have made themselves familiar with the names of the local hook and line fishermen. And when those calls come in, they're able to take the boat number that's provided, determine if the person being called in on is a commercial fisherman, and if they find out that they are, then they're able to explain to that caller the difference in the commercial and recreational hook and line fishing so that they understand. The commercial flounder fishery, as you know, is a quota-managed fishery. There's an inshore quota. There is an offshore quota. The inshore quota is what covers the commercial hook and line fishery, as well as your pound nets, your gill nets. As far as I know, to date, this quota has never been met. The unused portion of this quota will be reassigned late in the year to the offshore fishery, and those fish are going to be caught. Those quotas are going to be met. The amount of fish that are allotted to the quota, whether it be inshore or offshore, are going to be caught. In closing, Mr. Commissioner, I would like to point out that the reality of the situation is that there is no known scientific evidence that making this change is going to benefit the flounder resource. Therefore, it is only public perception of unfairness that's brought this issue before you. I fear that giving in to this public perception will or may well set a precedent that will lead to many more issues coming before this commission based on the perception instead of proven scientific conservation practices. The next call may well be, you changed that, now I want you to change your regulations for gill nets, because I have a recreational gill net. I have to abide by recreational size limits, and yet I fish right alongside a commercial gill netter who can keep 14-inch fish, and that's just not fair. That may well be the next issue that comes before you. I respectfully ask that you make your decision based on the conservation of the resource and not on a public perception of fairness. That you not take away this lifeline for these individuals behind me. That you not make the licenses that cost thousands of dollars worthless, and that no changes be made to separate these commercial hook and line fishermen from all other commercial fishermen by raising the size limits from 14 inches to something higher just for this faction of commercial fishermen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barr. Any questions of Mr. Barr? Thank you, John. Anyone else? Mr. Ludford?
Somewhat of a speech prepared, so I'm going to try to stick to that, but I am going to add some other things. Good afternoon, Commission members. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you. My name is Chris Ludford, and I hold a general purpose commercial hook and line license. I've been involved with commercial hook and line fishing since 1993, when I first became a registered Virginia commercial fisherman. I witnessed the meeting of two commercial hook and line task forces. One was in 94, and I was appointed to one of them in 2000. I'd like to mention a few individuals that are involved along the way: Dr. Ken Neal, Richard Welton, Gordon Burkett, Larry Snyder, Bill Reynolds, Harry Durante, Kelly Place, Pete Freeman, Tommy Leggett, Bob Pride, Don Liverman, Bruce Graham and Grayson Rogers, Claude Bain, Jack Stallings, just to name a few. They've been involved in these processes since 1994. Also heavily involved in the meetings and subsequent discussions this past winter that almost mirror the topics at hand today. Those deliberations produced a unanimous decision by staff and the Finn Fish Management Advisory Committee to not further pursue any changes to the hook and line regulations except for the crew size issue, which we as an industry openly embrace for change. And I'll get to that on the next agenda item. I do want to give you some more history. Mr. Gillingham gave you a good bit of the history, but some of this, say, goes back to 94. Our ranks have been subjected to repeated attacks by various fishing clubs and so-called conservation groups since 1994. In 2000, a large group of concessions were made that included capping our numbers at 200 licenses. I do have the notice that advertised that. I think Mr. Gillingham said 96, but I think it was 2000. Either way, we've been limited to 200 people. I was vehemently opposed to that at the time. We also voluntarily included ourselves in a spade fish regulation, which was then based on neither science nor coastal management plan and still isn't. The voluntary limit of 6 fish per angler has personally cost me roughly $5,000 a year, or $65,000 since its inception in 1997. That was for spade fish. That was part of the concessions that we dealt with then. We have to abide by the same bag and size limits as recreational fishermen on all but 5 species of fish. We cannot fish for black drum within 300 yards of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, all 17 miles of it. That's open water. We cannot commercial hook and line within 300 yards of any bridge, tunnel, jetty, or pier from 6 p.m. Friday until 6 p.m. Sunday, year-round. And during any recreational rockfish season, we are further restricted to 300 feet from 6 a.m. Friday until midnight Sunday. Again, please keep in mind that some of these bridge tunnels are fairly large jetties. And we are easily identified by the plates that we are required to display on both sides of our vessels while fishing. All this seems to be excessive when you consider the following quote by year 2000 Commercial Hook and Line Task Force member Dr. Ken Neal from his final report, which on August 30th, 2000, he gave. And at the time, Mr. Travelstead expressed his desire to use, quote, to use most of it as an official task force report to the commission. I have a copy of that. Dr. Neal said, and I quote, at the beginning of his report. Hook and line is a very desirable commercial gear. It allows a high-quality product to be collected with a minimal impact on non-targeted species and on the environment. Instead of encouraging this gear type, current regulations have resulted in a decrease in the number of hook and line fishermen. We are an evolving segment of the commercial fishery. Our numbers include retirees, members of law enforcement, retired doctors, professionals, women, families, and commercial fishermen who may or may not utilize other gear types or participate in other fisheries. Many do. We provide flounder at a time of year when Virginia's largest commercial flounder fishery offshore trawl is not even operating. Scott McDonald, a fish buyer at the last FMAC meeting, supported this fact by stating that all the flounder he bought and sold this past summer was commercial hook and line caught. We provide seafood to those who do not fish or own a boat. We provide fresh premium seafood to restaurants, sushi bars, fishmongers, and the like. Some of our industry members have invested tens of thousands of dollars to be able to catch and hold live flounder. We continue to invest in our fishery with state-of-the-art boats, gear, coolers, live wells, bait, pure oxygen holding systems, and the license itself. Some of the people in this room have driven over 5 hours to be here. They've already been recognized. Thank you for your attendance. I'm asking that we keep the size limit at 14 inches on this particular issue, and I will not repeat my speech for the subsequent issues, but I have some comments to make there as well. Appreciate your time. I also would like to mention, like I say, there's a lot of people, this is their gear of choice. They're licensed Class A Gillnet endorsed permit holders, but they choose to commercial hook and line fish. I think a gillnet's an excellent tool. Some people don't. I think these people would prefer to hook and line, but if they can't hook and line, they're going to go gillnetting where they can keep a 14-inch flounder. With that, I will entertain any questions. I appreciate your time. And
thank you, Chris. Questions? Kelly?
Well, my name is Kelly Place. I'm a commercial fisherman, and like I said, I've had the commercial hook and line since its inception in 93. I'd also mention I sat in on the round tables that went on from 91 and 92 as they were calculating what the new fishery management regime that we're under now would be like, and also testified twice in front of joint sessions of the General Assembly, Joint Senate and House Chesapeake and Trib sessions when they were configuring the new management regime, as well as the new licenses, one of which was the commercial hook and line license. I would quote the CCA director at that time, as well as two other gentlemen who were to become CCA director subsequently, as well as the director of the saltwater fishing tournament, that it was a very desirable license, but that if people were going to catch fish hook and line, and this was the main refrain that we heard for years and still do, they needed to be treated as commercial fishermen. And essentially they said they needed to be subject to the same rules, the same quotas, the whole same regime of different restrictions that commercial fishermen labor under. Now, that was great, but as you heard, and by the way, I'm just going to speak extemporaneously, not from a prepared statement. I'm going to try just to concentrate on the things that you haven't heard from other people. As you heard, though, from 93 to 95, it was the same bag limits, even though the restrictions on the commercial hook and line became increasingly restrictive. In other words, they were being treated, unlike what the recreational community had asked for at first, they were being treated as recreational fishermen while being subject to all the commercial restrictions. One thing that I think is a little bit important to clarify is that, as Mr. Gillingham said, after 1993, because it became a valid gear, anyone could buy a commercial hook and line license, but there's a big major qualification to that. Only anyone who had also bought a commercial registration card first could do that. And if you hadn't bought your commercial registration card when it was first issued, the bills that the legislature passed in 92 that were implemented in 93, House Bill 789, 791, and 792 specified a delayed entry period for the commercial registration card. So it wasn't that anyone could go get this, even when they first established the license. You had to pay your money up front for the commercial registration card and wait at least 2 years, and the way the calendar went, sometimes it was closer to three, just to be able to get the commercial registration card, which then entitled you to buy the commercial hook and line license. So it was a bit more restrictive than just anyone going out and buy it. And it was a major sea change, like Mr. Gillingham said. Prior to 93, anyone and their brother with any gear they wanted to buy could go out and catch any type of fish and sell it anywhere they wanted. So it was a major change, and while they broke a lot of eggs to make the omelet, and I'm sure their complaints are a lot of applause and kudos that have been given to management for bringing the fisheries under a more comprehensive set of regulations, for better or worse. But it's important to recognize, though, in addition to what you've heard of why the size limit is 14 inches, that when ASMFC calculates the commercial quotas, as they would for and allocates it as well to each state, the entire commercial quota is calculated on a 14-inch size limit. Now, it's true that that 14-inch size limit was largely derived because of the trawl fishery and because of the desire to avoid discards and waste in the trawl fishery, but that 14-inch size limit is also, I believe, integral to the actual poundage quota that's allocated, regardless of how Virginia allocates it between hook and line, trawl, gillnet, or whatever. So just to have some uniformity in the market, I believe that's why all this time that the commercial fishery, as for all other commercial gears, is limited to a 14-inch size limit. We feel that not only would it be discriminatory to the commercial hook and line to be held to a different size limit for a, you know, for a recreational regime, which we have nothing in common with, but we feel it'd be disruptive to the market as well. You know, any other commercial gear can put a 14-inch fish on the market except for commercial hook and line. And like you've heard other people, if it was consigned to that, it would essentially kill the fishery. When the license was first established, bag limits and size limits on a whole range of species were far different than they are now. And it was easier to make a living with your commercial hook and line. For example, in those days, cobia, there was no limit, except eventually they put a 36 or 37 inch limit. Many other species that now have size, bag limits, seasons, and the other restrictions didn't have those then. As they implemented those restrictions over the years, mostly for recreational fisheries, typically the commercial fishery, the commercial hook and line fishery, but not the other fisheries, would get caught up in that and would be subject to all these new stringent regulations, many of which really were inappropriate for a commercial fishery. Flounder is, and as I think Mr. Ludford mentioned, four other species are the only places where the commercial hook and line was able to draw the line and not be subject to constant double standards. The standard that was established is that we'd be treated as any other commercial fishery and subject to the commercial regulations. But in practice, year after year, and that's why we had the task forces in 94 and 2000, and because of largely of perception, largely uneducated perception, people would come up with hey, I don't like that this person or that person, he's able to do this, that, and the other. Well, one major difference, I think, and you all know this, between recreational and commercial fishermen, is that the commercial fisherman has to report every single organism on every single day in every single place and just a wide range of other data, which is important, and management gets a lot of incredibly valuable, irreplaceable data from that. And they get a lot of credit for managing fish, as they do with that data. But the poor guys at the bottom of the pyramid, a lot of whom aren't exactly academics or CPAs, many of whom are relying on their wives or children or whoever to fill out their commercial reports, it's one heck of a burden. It is difficult to keep up with every organism that you bring on board. And as the commercial hook and line, these crew sizes, those came about in 2000, and mostly to keep what has happened apparently in, I think, two instances, to keep anyone from using the commercial hook and line as a recreational method to get around the bag limits. And I think pretty much everyone here supports the proposed 15 crew limit. I would say that I thought after the third meeting of the Commercial Hook and Line Task Force in 2000, I thought that's what we had decided to do. But we also have the very stringent requirement, unlike any other commercial fishery, unlike any recreational fishery for that matter, of I think just four people on board any boat that's commercial hook and line fishing. The one reasonable thing I can think about that is a six-pack charter would not be able to bring six people and thereby circumvent the bag limits. But it's a fairly difficult regulation because your same crew isn't always available. So
can we stick to the 14.5-inch?
So on the 14-inch, I think because of those and many other reasons that over time the compromises, the hard compromises and agreements that have been made over the years, and for all the reasons and many more that I haven't mentioned, I really think that urge you to follow the staff recommendation and keep that at 14 inches. It is a key high-value fishery because, like as you heard, there aren't flounder on board. And when I used to do this more, I hope to be able to start doing it again. Taking a live swimming fish in a cooler to a sushi restaurant, they give you $10 a pound in the rough. No other fish gets that. You can, with very little impact on the resource, make a much better financial living than you can just with, you know, in any other type of resource. Judging from the commissioner anxious to close up the hearing, I'll stop, but I do have a few other things. I'll submit them in writing if I think they're important.
We just got, like I said, the agenda's long and time is getting short.
Yeah, I just ask that you continue to hold us to these double standards that have been layered on us over and over and over from people that weren't there at the inception of when the thing was created and all the compromises and agreements that were reached.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Greg South, Commercial Hook and Line. I will be brief.
Thank you, Mr.
Just wanted to say that I was the one earlier reported 255 pounds, but just for information purposes, on that given day, if I was bound by the recreational, I had three keeper fish on that day. So that's an example of how many you have to catch in order to have a few keepers. I can't emphasize enough how important I think it is about education. The biggest problem I hear from the people fishing alongside me, recreational anglers, is they don't understand the difference. They don't understand the cost that we have to go through. When you tell them, you know, it costs thousands of dollars to do this, you do reports and you pay extra fees at the beginning of the year, they're like, oh, well, I didn't know that. And I'd say, if you want to buy my license, if you got 12 or 15,000, no, I don't want to do that. You know, so education in some form, whether I try to educate people when I'm there. Clearly, though, there's going to be a small fraction of people who don't want to be educated. There's going to be a vocal group who are not going to be happy with that. But most people are understanding with that situation. I think they also don't understand about quotas, about commercial and recreational quotas. And I hear them say all the time, if you guys weren't out here catching these fish, we'd have a lot more fish to catch. And on the surface, you would think so. But hook and line is not on the recreational quota. And if they eliminated all hook and line fishermen, the recreational fishermen don't get to keep any more fish because it goes to the offshore trawlers. So who benefits? Does it help anything if you decide to do away with the hook and line or restrict them? Does it reduce the complaints? No, because the recreational anglers don't get to keep any more fish because they go to the people who are already getting 90 or 95% of the catch. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Saul. Mr. Dawson.
Jim Dawson, Chincoteague, Virginia, hook and line fisherman. Mr. Bowman, I'd like to ask that the board maybe take a recommendation to ask the VMRC to appoint certain representatives from industry so we can kind of meet together before these kind of things happen, and then it goes off on all these different tangents. You know, one of the things is we could maybe be informed of what happens instead of being surprised.
I thought that's what FMAC was for.
Well, we had that meeting before, and we came to a unanimous decision about 3 months ago, and it's here again. So
I understand.
One of the things I see, you know, we've never been treated as true commercial fishermen. I'd like to ask Mr. Plumley maybe see how you can single out one particular user group from a commercial figure.
Mr. Dawson, you have to refer everything to the chair, and I'll parse it.
Sorry about that.
You can't query the. That's okay.
Didn't do. Sorry about that.
Don't ambush me either with quizzes.
Okay.
When you're wearing me out.
Like I say, just from singling out one particular user group from a commercial fishery. I mean, if you compared my particular dollar value that I'm making versus the trawler that can't come in but one time, I think we're pretty daggone close. So, and I'm bringing that into our state. So I think that, you know, we are equals in the commercial industry.
I'll respond to that. I have absolutely no problem with that at all, and I haven't voted yet. So I'm you know.
I just wanted to make that point, I think we're here today because we're trying to establish some sort of security and protection for our future. And that's what I'd like to see happen somehow today.
Understood.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. I'll be brief. My name is Aaron Bumgarner. I am a commercial hook and line license holder. I am 32 years old.
Where do you reside, Aaron?
Excuse me?
Where do you live?
I live in Richmond.
Okay.
My father and I have a small commercial fishing operation on the Eastern Shore.
Good to have you here.
Primary commercial hook and line fish for flounder. Nothing more environmentally friendly than a commercial hook and line license. I support keeping the minimum size limit is 14 inches. And I also support the fact that, you know, I heard the word ambushed, and it kind of feels like that. You know, I'm having to take a day out of my schedule to come down here and deal with this. Second thing, you know, I heard someone make a comment that the recreational fishermen may be envious that we're fishing next to them and keeping a 14-inch fish when they have to abide by a different size limit. That doesn't take into consideration the number of fish that are caught, filleted in the boat, and then hidden and taken in. Thank you very much.
We like to take that into consideration, but you're right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Matter is before the commission, Mr. Bowden. Whoa, time out. Is there anyone here in support of the issue? Mr. Bowden.
A little history for people on the commission. Some of them probably don't know where a lot of this stuff got started. When Virginia first got a quota, we decided, I was chairing FMAC back then, long before I was on the commission, to carve out a portion of it for inshore landings because we knew that the capacity offshore could catch the quota in a very short order. And you'd have traditional fisheries such as pine nets, gill nets, and other ones that would be shut out of the fishery. And we wanted this money to stay in the local economy because all the money generated by the local fishermen was mostly Virginia income, and taxes and everything was paid on it. So we decided to carve out 300,000 pounds. And it was just arbitrary number. We knew it was going it had been higher in previous landings, but we were hoping with the expansion of the fish stock that the number would go up. So we carved out to 300,000 pounds. And originally, as you saw from his presentation, the side limits were very close. Basically, what we have is two different ways of managing a fishery. The commercial's hard quota with a closed season to accomplish us staying within the quota. Also, the quota has a payback measure. If the commercial goes over, they have to pay back and the overages comes off the following year. On the recreational side, they didn't want closed seasons, so they would rather go up on the minimum size limits, so they had the season open year-round. I mean, we had a lot of complaints as the commission for a one-week closure, a two-week closure. You know, the commercial fishery now is basically not counting this 300,000-pound carve-out for the inshore fishery. It's basically a 12-day spring season and a 12-day winter season. You know, people get the land one time. So really, we're managing it two different ways. We're accomplishing the exact same thing. So really, there is no difference. But you can hurt yourself with large size limits. People don't realize it. But when you the larger the size limit, you're catching all, in flounder most especially, you're catching female fish. You're catching all the fast growers, which is probably two things that you really don't need to do. Basically, if we could get the minimum size limit down so that we catch smaller fish, you would be catching some of the slow growers and the males. But predominantly all your recreational fish are females. The nice thing about the hook and line landing is all that money stays in the state, basically. I mean, there's some people that did from out of state, but the majority of that money stays in the state. You're getting a better product at a time of the year when it's at a higher price. So, you know, and we had a very good discussion back in, I suppose, January. I didn't realize it was that far away. I'm like Jim Dawson there. Time flies, Jim. But, you know, we had a very long discussion at FMAC. I thought we aired everything out. We all come to an agreement that, you know, when we left there to recreational commercial, all agreed that it was just two different ways of managing one fishery, and they were equivalent to each other, and we left with that in mind. And then my colleague here, I would say buddy, but I'm going to say colleague today, brought this up the last time about the 14 inches. And I understand there's a lot of pressure, and Mr. Tankard brought it up before one time, and there is a lot of pressure from the recreational side. But, you know, I think you would be double managing it because we already got a quota, and then we have a quota inside of the quota, and now we have to go with a recreational size limit. You know, that would be an additional one. So you would be treating anybody in the hook and line industry very unfairly. And in my opinion, probably illegally, but definitely unfairly anyway. So far as I'm concerned, you know, and FMAC, as far as they're concerned, we just feel like leaving it where it is was the appropriate place to for us to be, and that's going to be my suggestion that we don't take it up, we just leave it at current level. And if we need to do something in the future, we can always look at it again, but, you know, I don't think we need to be bringing up the same issues several times a year. And, you know, people work very hard, and they're missing days work to be here. Some of them had to miss it to come to FMAC. They've had to miss it again back in January or February, and it's the exact same issue. And most of it is just miscommunication. People don't understand that we're accomplishing our goal two different ways, but we're all going forward on the exact same goal. And as you can look at the stock assessment, we're achieving something. So that's going to be my opinion. I just think we need to just leave it where it is.
Thank you,
and
Mr.
not take it up.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to take an opportunity to commend the FMAC and the staff for what was a very thorough review, I think, of this question. We're really here today because we did have a request for a new endorsement license that would have potentially expanded the summer flounder CHL fishery. And as it turns out, those concerns are largely mooted. It sounds like we may have one or two or three or a small handful of permittees that ultimately participate in the fishery. And so I think that concern has been directly blunted by that dynamic that staff has presented today. In the interest, though, of asking for that expansion, I thought it was important that the commission review this issue of the size discrepancies from a public policy standpoint, because as Ernie pointed out, there is a lot of history here. There have been task force meetings that go back to 1993. I think Chris Ludford pointed out a lot of the history there. And so, you know, I think this has been informative to go through that history and really dig into the issues. But going back to the original basis for the 14-inch size for the commercial fishery, that really does stem from the otter trawl fishery, and that is that the intent was not to somehow have a magic biological number, but just to minimize dead discards and result in a higher net available quota in terms of total available landings for Virginia's commercial fishery. That was the original basis. If we were trying to achieve the optimum productivity out of the stock and increase the yield per recruit, we wouldn't be catching the fish at 14 inches. We'd be catching them at a higher number. But having said that, it does go directly to the gear, and that doesn't really hold up with the rod and reel gear. And so I think it is appropriate to review that question. But having done that, it appears now from all the comment that we've received, and I've received a lot of calls on this issue, but apparently 90% roughly of the catch or more falls within that 14, 18 and a half inch size limit. And so to create parity between the two fisheries now would effectively eliminate the CHL fishery for summer flounder. And so I think if we were to try to address this from a public policy standpoint, simply to cure a policy concern, the cost of it in economic terms would simply be too great. So I do support the recommendation of FMAC and the staff. I would also point out that the current stock projections show us rebuilding the stock within the next year. And as that happens, we've just recommended a 7 million pound quota increase federally. As we continue to rebuild the stock, the availability of the fish, as well as the available quota, should increase. And as that happens, we should be able to relax the recreational minimum size over time, so the two should converge over time. So, again, I think this has been informative. There are a lot of good things that we can say about the CHL fishery. It doesn't have the protected resources concerns that some of our other gear types have, and it's clearly a vibrant fishery as indicated by the attendance that we have here today. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased to support the FMAC recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Further comments?
Mr. Chairman, I would just suggest we move to the next agenda item.
Well,
got to have a motion.
No, I don't have the matter's before the commission. If I don't have a motion, then it's status quo. Matters before the commission.